This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, this week's episode is brought to you by the Friends of the Magic Word. And this week, we'd also like to welcome two new members of the Friends of the Magic Word. One is Massimiliano Ghini, if I pronounced that correctly. He goes by Max. He's from Italy. And also, we welcome Greg Finch. And Greg represents Chief Trick's Magical Exploratorium. How about that? That's quite a mouthful. So thank you, Max, and thank you, Greg, for becoming members of the Friends of the Magic Word. And for those of you who might like to know more about how that you can help us financially, if you'll just go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you'll see a place where you can become a friend, and you can watch the video or read what it is that you can do, whether that you want to give a one-time donation or if you want to give a monthly pledge, either through PayPal or through patreon.com. Well, we thank you again very much for your financial support and also for each and every one of you who are listening. And later on, I'm going to announce the winners of the books, the e-books that were offered this last week. We had a contest that was going on that was for 5 free copies of the book, The Mind Trap, that was by Greg Koren, and then the had 3 books from John Gaspard of The Zombie Ball. And those will be announced, those names will be announced at the end of this podcast, which is going to feature a friend of mine, Mr. John Bannon. John and I go way back, and both of us really being from Illinois, but I'm in southern Illinois, and he's in the, actually in the northern part up in Chicago, and he is an attorney and also just an excellent card magician, and has a bunch of books and DVDs out, and all of which are really good, and I would recommend, whether that you are going to be an expert card handler or someone who is just getting started, he's got a lot of good advice and good tricks that are in those books and DVDs. Again, highly recommended. So I've been wanting to try to get together with John for quite some time, actually, that we've crossed paths at the 4F convention every year, and there are so many things going on, and late nights and early mornings, and so many people that I'm trying to get together with from other countries. It's one of those kind of guys I kind of have always felt, well, I'll catch you next time. We'll get together. And our paths have crossed, and even our rooms have been next to each other, and we just still hadn't been able to get together. So when I was recently in Dallas at the Pebble Palooza that Lance Pierce organized as part of the Magic Pebble, I got a chance to sit down with John and finally put this podcast together, which I hope that you will enjoy. Gets to talk a little bit about the Saturday session that he has with Simon Aronson and David Solomon and David Finkelstein. So there are a lot of other things that are some revelations that you might find interesting in this conversation. So please enjoy this week's conversation with Sir John Bannon here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com. And today I've got a person who is an author, performer, lecturer, and man about the world, a professional businessman. And he has appeared in not only books that he's written, but also in DVDs, and is a very intellectual gentleman, someone that I've been looking forward to talking with for such a long time. Actually, that he's been attending the Fecker's Finger Flicking Frolic for a long number of years, and we've talked about the last 3 years trying to get together, and circumstances have not provided us to actually get together. So we happened to be in Dallas at the same time, and that I said, okay, let's make it a date. And we did.
Let's
and
do it.
It's late at night right now. Please welcome my friend, John Bannon. Hey there, John.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great. You are, too. I'm glad to have you finally, Sue.
Oh, yeah. It's great to do this. It's a medium that you don't see a lot. You're the only guy who does it.
There are a few other magic podcasts out there. You know, mine.
Yeah.
There,
Well, I think there are probably four that I can think of offhand. There's one out of England. Kayla Drescher and Carissa Hendricks have one that's called Shazam Pod, which is two ladies speaking about the distaff side of magic. Basically, there's one called the Discourse Magic, in which that is more marketing. Well, all the other ones really have an agenda. Mine is just like we're friends and right. We talk.
Cool.
And so it kind of goes in whatever direction. But there are a lot of things I was going to talk to you about. One of the things this evening that I was just came to mind, it had to do with one of the books you wrote, which Mentalissimo. How did you come up with that title?
I've never been afraid of having obscure titles.
Yeah. Right?
And it's not a real word.
No.
It sounds like a real word, like a superlative in Italian or something.
That you'd use in music or something.
Right.
Fortissimo.
And so for some reason or another, it occurred, it popped into my brain and just stuck there. And so when I had the opportunity to use it, mm-hmm.
Same thing with different titles of tricks that you have. I always like different things that have kind of fun things. Do they just come to you and they stick, or do you have working titles and then you change them, or how do you?
A little bit of both. Titles are part of the fun.
Yeah, I think
so. Right? And so I always try to take a little bit of care in picking out the titles. Mm-hmm. And, there is the horse races. Thoroughbreds who horse race.
Yes, right? Thoroughbreds are horse race, right.
Their names reflect both their matrilineal, their mother's side, and mm-hmm. their father's side. And mm-hmm. that's why you get these weird horse names.
Really? So you kind of get the combination. So they sound like porn names or something.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of a mishmash or something.
So some of the card tricks that I name, I'm trying to reflect all the influences in the title. Yeah.
Right. But another thing I thought was funny, the reason I mentioned Mentalissimo is because of the cover that looked kind of like Pulp Fiction kind of a thing.
Oh, yeah. I love that cover.
How did you come up with that? Or did you work with a graphic artist and said, hey, what do you think of this? Or did you have the idea?
I had the idea, and then I worked with a graphic artist.
Yeah.
And you can't tell by looking, but what this is a woman in jail playing solitaire on her cot. Okay. And I had we airbrushed or whatever, photoshopped out the solitaire part.
Oh, okay.
So it looks like she's just holding the three of spades against her head.
Yeah.
Rather than playing solitaire.
So was that a stock photo or was that a model that
I got it off the internet, yeah.
Okay. Huh.
So I mean it's been around for a while.
Okay, but it does have that Pulp Fiction type of a look and cover, the way that the Mentalissimo says across the top. Did that come out sometime around the Quentin Tarantino movie? How long ago was that book out?
Oh, no. It was out like 2 years ago.
Oh, that's recent then.
Two or 3 years. Yeah. Well, 3 years.
Which most recent one is the Destination Zero?
No, Mentalissimo is the most recent one.
It is? Okay. Yeah. When did Destination Zero come out? Or that?
A year before that, say 2015 maybe.
Okay. Kind of getting ahead of myself because I was going to ask you about your kind of development of some of that stuff, and that is that did you start writing books before you started doing DVDs?
I did. Uh-huh. I did. Well, I mean, a little bit of both. Back in the day, say the early 90s, or actually late 80s, A1 Multimedia.
Sure. Was Mike that Maxwell? Yeah, sure.
Yeah. He started making videos, uh-huh. and I was, J.C. Wagner was the first guy he did.
That's right.
And I was the second.
Uh-huh. I remember there was a plain white box with like a little spade or something in the middle and had a picture of you or something.
Right,
yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And then a year later, I did the second one. Mm-hmm. And
And you went out to L.A. to do that, I guess? Or
yeah. Mm-hmm. Mike used to have this convention at the Capitol, which was a very dense-packed magic convention, and it mm-hmm. was a lot of fun. And I tried to go to as many of those as I...
Were you performing or just hanging out or lecturing? Or
a little bit. It depends. One year, uh-huh. Most of the time I would just be attending.
And that's where he got to know you and said, hey, I want to do a video with you project?
No. Yeah. For the most part, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He'd solicited you. You didn't go to him and say, hey, I got some ideas? Or
No, I didn't. In fact, after that, I really sort of decided not to do video ever again.
Really?
Yeah.
It was a bad experience.
Well, no, it was a fine experience, but the video, it was L&L Video was the one making all the videos at the time.
Yes.
And I was not a fan of the format at all, right?
How was the format different from what was later?
Well, let's see.
He has trick.
Well, he has got a table and a person doing the tricks, and he has a studio audience and all of that. And it certainly worked.
It worked, yeah.
Yeah. But it wasn't what I wanted. I mean, if I was going to do a video, I'd want it to be kind of different.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So you didn't do anything for a long time. That's when you started doing books then.
Yeah.
Well, so then what's his name? Liam? Liam. From
it's Owen.
Owen.
Owen, yeah. From Big Blind Media.
Yes.
Yeah. What had happened was they had done a video for Josh J.
Yeah.
And it looked great. And it was kind of weird and funky and all of that. And so I said to myself, if I was going to do a video, I'd want them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And right about the same time, Owen got in touch with me and said, would you like to do a video? So
yeah,
it was kind of karma there. And the rest is history. I mean, he's a outstanding producer and maker of videos.
Yeah.
And he makes me look good, or makes me look better. So I trust his judgment, and I have a lot of fun making videos with them.
They do a lot of takes. I mean, you know, like when you're doing a movie or a television show, that they have different angles. I mean, of course, different cameras and whatnot. And then the director might say, "Stop, let's redo this again." I mean, do they do multiple shoots, or it's kind of like after the first one, that's like, "Oh, that's good," and had good reactions with the ladies or whatever, or how'd that work?
It's a little bit of both. I know. The first one we did, I joke with Owen about it. He goes, "That was perfect.
Yeah,
let's do it again." And we did. You know, we probably did three or four takes of every trick and every
with a different audience, with different assistants.
No, this was the same thing. This is in the process.
Okay, gotcha. Of the explanation.
Yeah. And as we got to know each other a little bit better, and as he got more and more cameras, I mean, I think the last video that I did had 7 cameras running at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And it's easy for him to sort of pick the right angle and all that kind of stuff. And so, now we kind of burn through them. I mean, we do. Only he'll do another take if I ask him to, and you know, if I stutter or if I forgot something important, then we'll do it again.
Right. The place where it appears that it's being filmed looks like a countryside farm area. Is that right, or is that just an external shot of something else?
No. Owen lives in Shropshire, which is northwest England. And it's one of those places where there's more sheep than there are people.
Okay.
And
so did you fly to London and then drove up?
And drove up.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And
like northwest of Manchester, even on up further?
No, it's not that far up.
Okay.
Yeah, it's sort of like right at the top of Wales, I think.
Oh, okay.
And
kind of near Nottingham, maybe. And I think it's out that way. Okay. People who are in England are listening, saying, "You don't know what you're talking about." So I'll just
exactly.
Shut up.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so that's where he lives now, and so there's lots of little houses and barns and stuff around that he uses for locations.
So it looked like that would be a perfect place. I mean, certainly that he would have the 7 cameras, I guess, in a studio, in a barn or something, set up like that.
Yeah.
That kind of stayed there, so he'd bring different people in, I guess, to shoot or...
Well, not really. I mean, he'd set that up for me.
Oh, really?
And, okay. And then he recently started renting a studio.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is where he's taking most of the stuff now.
Okay.
But it's a lot of fun because the Move Zero was in a old barn that was turned into a really nice little place to stay.
Oh, okay. So it's not a bed and breakfast, but it's really kind of a loft apartment.
I mean, yeah, he lives there. Apartment. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And, flat, I guess.
Yeah. And On one of them, we had a drone flying around, so you know, there's these little bits that kind of make it different from the ordinary.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And the assistants, it seems like those are attractive ladies. That are they friends of his or somebody that he just, I mean, for an example, going back to L&L, you mentioned earlier how that they have a live audience there, that they bring in, Lewis would bring in some of the same people all the time. Some of them were employees of his and others that would live over in Tahoe that he'd bring over, you know, to the place. And so you would see a lot of the same people, it right. seems like, in their mm. videos. Is that kind of the same thing that he would bring, Owen would bring in some of his friends? Are they on this?
For when I'm doing videos with him, it's sort of normal people.
I mean, you're not going out to a bar and shooting at a bar. It looks like they brought some right. people they, from they, the bar to the barn,
or right?
Wherever.
And he also hires models
yeah.
to come and watch.
I mean, they appear to be very attractive.
Yeah,
ladies.
Yeah, 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 and they're a lot of fun.
Yeah,
you know, and they know why they're there.
And their reactions look genuine. In other words, that models know how to act and whatever, and on television or whatever, but look like that they were like real people and real reactions.
Right, and that's the advantage of one take.
Yes.
Because you get the initial reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you can't do it in one take. So,
right, yeah. Right. It seems, by the way, I want to say, for those who are listening, I had done a review of Move Zero, and it's one of my favorite DVD sets. And I'm not saying that just because you're sitting here. If you go back and listen to this, you know, just had a lot of really good material, usable commercial material for those who want to go back and to listen to the review on that. Just do a search on the website here for themagicwordpodcast.com. And anyhow, the reason I think it is so good is because there are almost like self-working things. I mean, it's something that I would say, I really don't want to say beginner, but it is easy enough that you can learn most of the things, as it says, with, you know, zero moves, you know.
Right.
A lot of things, some are mentalism kinds of things, but it depends a lot upon your presentation that you would use them.
Yeah, and which is, you know, part of the fun. I mean, you know, most self-working card tricks, traditionally, most are self-working card tricks require stacks or weren't very good. And, mm-hmm. and my approach was a little bit different. And to the extent there is procedure involved, you want to disguise that as best as you can or deal with it as best as you can.
Would you say that most of the things that are on there do not require a lot of prior preparation or setup?
That's the goal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There are a couple things where I just think they play better if you have like a small packet instead of using a deck. And there's some where you need to know the top card or the bottom card or something before mm-hmm. you start. And I have strategies for that, which are on the video.
And for those who are listening also, it's not all cards. It has some coins and other kinds of
things. It has things. A coin trick.
I like coin trick.
I mean, I'm a card guy. I mean, that's what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. What's your favorite on that? I mean, it's like babies, I know. You know, they're all beautiful, but which one of the effects do you like best that you really kind of did this one first, you know? It's like the rest of them are kind of, these are good too, but this is my real baby.
You mean on Move Zero?
Yeah, on Move Zero on the DVD.
Yeah, that actually, first I want to make clear for people who are listening that this is not a change in the way I do magic. It mm-hmm. was a project. Mm-hmm. And it was trying to capture some of the self-working tricks I had already done and then expand upon those. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it was planned. I mean, I purposely laid out the four discs in a way that what I was trying to avoid was people liking the first one and then finding the second one somewhat less and the third one somewhat less.
Yeah.
So I was trying to balance it in a way that, you know, everybody got the same sort of reaction to all four of the videos. And you can't ask me to pick a favorite.
No, I can understand that. But it appeared, though, that in the DVD that you showed where this came from one of your previous books. I mean, it looked like that it was kind of almost this video was the best of the Bannon books kind of a thing. That's kind of way I was thinking. Well, I shouldn't say the best. Let me rephrase that. The best of the self-working kinds of things that met the criteria that you were looking for. Does that make more sense?
Yeah, and that was the project. It was, you know, in my books and everything, I probably had 20, 25 of the 40 tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of them sort of came about by just because of the nature of the project.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of fun. And I know it is suitable for new people,
mm-hmm.
for brand new people, but that wasn't why I made it. I mean, it's not, I didn't make it as an entry level DVD.
You made it as what?
As a collection of tricks for, okay. for people who do card tricks. They just mm-hmm. happen to be self-working.
Yeah, right.
So
it seemed to have a little bit of a feel, a different feel, I should say. It seems like it was the fourth one, the one towards the end. It looked like, you know, that you came back to England and reshot something. Maybe it was a different studio or a different, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we did two and then two.
That, maybe that was it, two and yeah, it seems like that it was the last two had a different feel than the first two.
Right, and that's because that's just a shortcoming of mine. I can't hold 40 tricks in my head at
I thought you went home and then came back like 6 months later and did another shoot.
Yeah, it was more like a year later.
But you did, that is what it is. So it was two yeah. and two. That's okay, that makes sense. That's what I thought.
So, I mean, it's a lot easier to get ready for 18 tricks than it is mm-hmm. 40, you know.
Well, you're not working every night. I mean, it's not like you're working a restaurant or doing something else, you know.
Well, that's true, things. Yeah.
You know, if you were, it's like, okay, I got all these in my head, and I'm just going to go boom, boom, boom all the way through all those, and I got more stuff also, you know, than this. But in your case, when you got another full-time job, you're still doing lawyering, I guess.
Yeah, I'm still practicing law. And,
what kind of law do you practice?
I'm a litigator, commercial.
Personal litigator.
So not bodily, not injury, not auto accidents.
Mm-hmm.
When one business sues another business, or one partner sues another partner,
that's, over what kind of?
Well, I mean, for example, businesses can sue. It's mainly contract. You know, one business promises
contract that, infringement.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing, or they steal someone's idea, intellectual property?
I did intellectual property when I was at the law firm downtown, and then mm-hmm. about 5 years ago, I started my own practice.
Okay.
And
what's your firm called?
It's called Bannon Law Firm.
Okay. That's what I thought had your name. I didn't know if you had other partners, but it's just you and then...
No, it was just me. And
So you don't always go downtown. You were saying to me earlier that you sometimes, you know, work out of the house, I guess.
That's right. Yeah. I actually do most of the work out of my house. Mm-hmm. And I go downtown when I must, which mm-hmm. is for, you know, court calls, mm-hmm. to meet clients.
Right.
Or to do depositions. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, as you were saying, businesses sue other businesses primarily in contract.
Mm-hmm.
But partners sue partners. It's a little bit like a divorce.
I hadn't really thought about that.
Because they're breaking up,
sure.
And there are hard feelings, and
there are never any amicable cases, I guess. Where
yeah,
in that case,
it's tough.
Yeah,
I mean it's tough.
Huh.
So.
Yeah, because they're partners and they decide, hey, I don't like the kind of way, the direction you're going. I'd rather go this direction, and they have a difference of opinion as they grow different ways. And it's like, I want my half of the business, and yeah, it would
that's
be like
exactly
divorce.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
And
that could get pretty protracted over years.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Well, mm-hmm. one thing I tell everybody is, you know, lawsuits take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in Cook County, it could take 3 or 4 years. You know. So.
Do you see a lot of politics in Cook County in particular? I mean, I don't know if you practice outside the state, but but I think Cook County, you know, just being the city that it is in Chicago, you know.
it's busy because it's in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And when I was in the law firm, my practice was national. So I did mainly, I did a lot of federal kinds of cases, which didn't need to be in in Illinois, they could be anywhere. Delaware is mm-hmm. a popular location.
Well, aren't most companies incorporated in Delaware?
A lot of them are.
And so does that mean they have to litigate in Delaware?
No, they don't have to.
Okay.
But they can.
Okay. For those who are listening, I'm sorry to get so far into baseball on this. It's nothing to do with magic, but I just find this fascinating. And for some of the attorneys out there, it might appreciate that too. Anyhow, going back over to Magic, that so talking about going into Chicago, I really wanted to talk also about kind of your relationship with the group that you've got then with David Solomon and Simon Aronson and some of the guys. Do you call yourselves? You have a certain name? Like
we don't have a name.
Saturday Bunch or something? Or
I think we refer to it as the Chicago Session or something like that. But
And didn't you publish something as the Chicago Session as a group? One time I thought you had some sort of pamphlet, or maybe not. Maybe I'm just thinking.
I think there was maybe a trick or two, and then there was an article in a magazine article about the session, and it meets every Saturday. You know, usually at Simon's house. So I'll go downtown. We'll go get some lunch, and then we'll come back and sit around and do card tricks for the rest of the afternoon.
Yeah,
and. To me, it was invaluable because not only when I had a card trick, I could run it past these guys and because you know you never know when you have a blind spot.
Yeah,
and so that was very helpful too. But it was also helpful when I wasn't being particularly creative. It still gave me a place to go on Saturday and to talk about card tricks.
Who else was just those three of you, or who else was in the group?
There was Simon and Dave started it,
yeah.
And then when I moved to Chicago
from
Virginia,
okay,
actually from the Pentagon, but that's a whole nother story.
I didn't know that you could live in the Pentagon.
No, I mean I lived in Virginia, but
you worked in the Pentagon.
I worked,
because you're in the military for a while.
Yeah, I was in the Air Force, and. And so I kind of joined the group. Mm-hmm. And then I guess it was 6-7 years ago, we have a fourth member, David Finkelstein.
Finkelstein, that's the fellow I was trying to think of.
And he's a professor of philosophy.
At Loyola or?
At University of Chicago.
Okay.
So, he's offers a completely different perspective.
That's what I was going to say. Do you feel like that each of you guys are bringing a different perspective to the table? I mean, some like counting tricks and others like more mentalism kind of things with cards and other ones are mathematical or even different kinds of perspective.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, we sort of have different styles and do different kinds of tricks. But there's also it's also very opinionated. And, you know, people won't like a particular trick for a particular reason. Mm-hmm. And then it's up to me to whether I agree with them or not.
Okay.
You know. So, but it's fun and it was invaluable and it's been going on. I've been going for 20 years.
Okay.
And so, yeah, and we still go do it every Saturday.
Did it start with Marlowe?
Marlowe, all right, I came to the Marlowe party late.
Yeah.
Okay. And when I got there, Marlowe had the round table, which was in the back room of a restaurant somewhere where they drink coffee all afternoon and do card tricks.
Uh-huh.
And
who was part of that group?
No one that you would have heard of.
Okay.
And I'm having
Is that because they're underground guys, or they just weren't really out in the Magic community much, or?
Well, they were just Marlowe people.
Okay.
The people who liked them to. It was one of those things. The first time I went, you walk into the room, and then whatever they're doing, they stop and put the cards back in the card box, and you know.
Wow. Until they figure out who you are.
Right.
That's interesting.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. And. But I only went a couple of times because I got in with Simon and Dave and was doing that session rather than the Marlowe session. And then Marlowe passed away in 91.
Okay.
So that was very shortly. I moved to Chicago in 88, so there wasn't a whole lot of time there.
Right. I know that John Rockerbomber was part of the group and a friend of Marlowe's, but he lives in New Orleans then now. So how long ago, did you know John very well or at all back then? Or
I know him now.
Sure.
But back then, not so much.
I didn't know how long he actually did. He live in Chicago? I haven't.
Yeah, he lived in Chicago, mm-hmm. and then he moved away.
Okay.
And I mean, that's Marlowe seemed to have, you know, one person who he took under their wing or took it upon themselves to make sure he got places he needed to go and all that kind of thing. And it changed over the years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think John Rockerbomber was one of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know that Vernon similarly had somebody, seemed like that, usually the same guy, a couple of guys maybe, you know, that kind of...
Oh, Jennings and...
Yeah, that watched out for him, made sure that, you know, he got to where he needed to be and would drive him places and whatnot. So,
yeah.
I didn't know that Ed Marlowe had different people, you know, kind of watching out for him, yeah. you know, all the time then, too. Well, as that developed, so that was they kind of had their own separate things. Was Marlowe and then the one that Ed, Solomon, David Solomon.
It was two separate groups.
Was because they didn't get along, or did they have different styles, or that, okay,
well. Well, I mean, you know, Simon and Dave were Marlowe. Hung around with Marlowe for a long time.
I thought they had.
And then they broke off and started their own
Decided that, yeah, let's go a different direction. Okay, I understand. I got the basics, and let's move on to maybe something else.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Now, when you're working on a session with those guys, do you come back the next week? I mean, do you continue to work on something just on your own throughout the week while you're just sitting around the house? And then come back and say, here's how I improved or whatever I did from this last Saturday? I mean, you know, week after week after week after week after week, you know. You start to see some of the same things, I would think.
Well, you do and you don't. I mean, that's one good thing about card magic. There's a million different things you can do with cards. Mm-hmm. And, I play with cards during the week. I mean, mm-hmm. that's my hobby and it's what I like to do. And I like to make sure that it meets my criteria for what's a good trick and all of that. And so I do have, you know, I'll admit that sometimes I have blind spots where I think this is a great trick and it isn't. And then the guys at the round table would point that out.
Okay. Well, and likewise, I'm sure that you do for them. I
mean, oh, sure.
It's an honest session. You know?
Yeah, that's what makes it valuable. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's very little politics.
What's the end game? I mean, when you guys get together, aside from the love of it and doing it, it sounds like that probably is the end game. I mean, a book or two may come out of it, but that's not the intent necessarily.
Right. It's just playing, mm-hmm. you know, it's playing with card tricks and sharing things and talking about them and trying to make things better or having different insights into certain tricks, when they're brought to the session. We all write books though. I mean, mm-hmm. Dave Solomon writes, he has two or three books. Simon has several. I have several. So,
Finkelstein doesn't yet, does he?
Not yet, but I'm sure he will.
Okay. He's the youngest of the group then, or?
Yeah, but not by much.
Not by much?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm the young. I was the youngest of the group for a long time, and I think he's just a little bit younger than I am.
Yeah. Have there been other people who approach you and said, hey, can I join the group, and might come and go, or might show up and then kind of fade off, or?
Well, yeah, not on a regular basis, okay? But often magicians pass through Chicago.
Sure.
And an email is sent around saying so-and-so is going to be in town and they're going to come to the session and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then that makes, you know, that's interesting too.
Right.
And it's not very frequent, but it happens. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the session is a place that when people come to Chicago, they're kind of curious about.
And so they'll talk to Simon and say, hey, can I stop by? And say, yeah, you know, he knows him and said, you know, come on in. And particularly just passing through or something like that. Do you talk with Simon ever about his stack and saying, you know, compared to Mnemonica or anyone else's, you know?
Oh, no, I never memorized the deck. Okay. I think it drives Simon a little crazy, but... it just, I just never did it. And,
okay.
And he, you know, he's convinced it's just because I'm lazy, and he's probably right.
Well, has the other guys, have they
numbered? No, Dave hasn't, and David Finkelstein has a stack that he...
His own stack.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. But you never played with it?
No.
Okay.
No.
I mean, I've seen some amazing things, you know, from whoever stack, I mean, that you use. I mean, I've seen some routines that are just... knocked me out. When I saw my close to something once, and before I ever knew about a memorized stack, I don't know how, 20 years ago, you know, it's like, that's impossible.
Right. Yeah, there's certain things that you can do with a memorized deck that you can't do any other way.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's, there's a facility you need to have. I mean, you need to make the card to number and number to card associations very quickly.
Very quickly. Yeah, you can't really have any kind of hesitation for that to work.
That's right.
Otherwise, then people are thinking, you know, there's something to this. Yeah.
Yeah, or if it's too complicated, you get the math wrong, and then, mm-hmm. then what, you know?
Right.
So.
Yeah. But you just don't care to do it because there are so many other things that you enjoy doing. That's not your thing.
That's right. That's not basically. My thing.
What about packet tricks? You have any opinion on packet tricks?
I'm a huge packet trick fan.
Are you? Okay.
Oh, yeah. And I guess over the last 15 years or so, I have directed my energies towards packet tricks that end clean. And you will hear magicians saying, well, it's all about audience management, and if you manage them correctly, you don't have to show them the cards. And that may be true, but that doesn't mean they don't want to see the cards.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is if you know you can hand out the cards at the end, I think it changes the way you actually present the trick, because, you know, you don't have to set up spots where they can't go.
Mm-hmm.
And I also don't think, and this is somewhat controversial, that you need to take them out of a deck of cards. I am totally okay with taking out a little plastic wallet, taking out the cards, and doing the card trick.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the fact that the cards are examinable at the end sort of makes that okay.
I was just talking with someone last evening about Michael Skinner, and he was saying the first time he'd met him that he was in Las Vegas, the Golden Nugget, and he'd come to his table, and he pulled out a, you know, essentially like one of these case logic things that had a bunch of pages of packet tricks. And he just kind of scrolled through a bunch of them. They pulled, you know, out his Skinner's three-card Monty, you know, and other kinds of packet tricks. It's like he did, you know, like three different packet tricks for them. I mean, really good,
mm-hmm.
you know, and presentation-wise and whatnot, but, you know, they're kind of expecting him to have a deck and play kind of a thing. You know?
Yeah, packet tricks definitely have a place.
And they kind of get a bad rap, too, I think.
I think so, too, and it's undeserved.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
Emerson and West really were the kings of putting out all those, and I thought the packet tricks they put out also met your criteria, that is, that you can hand them out. I mean, let's say, like, Color Monty, at the end, they're all, or, you know, the whole trick, you know, that at the end, everything's examinable.
Well, yeah, when I was in Washington, you know, I did get to hang out with Larry West.
What was he like? I've known Arthur forever, you know, until he died, but
yeah,
I never knew Arthur at all.
He was a fun guy. He was a radio announcer.
Yeah, and, with Voice of America, wasn't it?
Voice of America.
Yeah.
And so he had that radio voice.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some very peculiar ideas, which some of which I've adopted completely.
And he's the one who actually, I think, came up with the trick idea, and then Arthur was the one who put the presentations into it, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think there was a relationship.
Yeah, I don't know how that
worked. Okay, but anyhow.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, to go to Fector's convention, you needed two references.
Yes.
Yeah. And Larry West was one of mine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. So you guys were close. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was...
I don't remember Larry coming to... I mean, I've been going for 35 years. And he probably was... It's just so long ago, I don't remember.
Yeah. He was in enough so that he could recommend me.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think he went very regularly.
But I interrupted what you were saying. You had a train of thought. You were saying that he had influenced you or his thought, or what was he like? I mean...
Oh, yeah, yeah. And So, well, here's an example. Larry would always try to make, if he had a pack a trick, he would always try to see if he can do it in jumbo cards. Because you can see them a lot better, and I have my own theory of jumbo cards, which is this. And this is probably Larry's had this in mind as well. And that is, you know, people say that you can do card tricks for an audience, and then the next day, all they'll remember is he did a bunch of card tricks. They won't remember anything in particular. And to a certain extent, I think that's valid. But a packet trick, because, I mean, in jumbo cards are not playing cards. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because nobody plays cards with jumbo cards. No. And so
I don't know who uses them, but aside from magicians.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so they're interesting and they're noticeable, and I think it breaks up the flow of card tricks generally, and gives audiences a place to anchor, a place to remember.
Mm-hmm.
And which
so
is
you are in favor of jumbo cards?
Oh yeah.
You do? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And but I mean it's hard to do. I mean, not every trick can be made in jumbo cards. Mm-hmm. So,
but that was kind of his philosophy also, that Larry was always trying to think of a small thing that he could make larger.
Yep.
Like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. And
did he ever show you some of the things he was working on before they came out?
He probably did.
Okay.
You know, I didn't have my finger on the pulse of what was going out.
Yeah.
And a lot of the things that he put out before I showed up.
Mm-hmm.
But he was still pretty active when I was there.
I remember the TAOM one year that Arthur Emerson was being interviewed by Derek Kennedy. And he spent a lot of time talking about Emerson West, but in particular about the Color Monty and about, I don't know, how many tens or hundreds of thousands of these. I mean, that everybody has that. That's just the best trick.
It's, you know, a great trick.
Mm-hmm.
I think. I don't like the goofy diamonds on the cards, but mm-hmm. but when I do it, I use just regular cards,
mm-hmm.
but I have a four or something with a lot of white space on it, and I write on it, "Wrong, you owe me $14," because it's the tagline that's written on the card, I think, that makes that trick memorable.
You know, I've used that in trade shows, in which that I'd have the company logo that I would put on a card to have mm-hmm. that as the final one that they would end up with. You know, there's the usual flap card that, you know, that or giveaways as well, and I've done that, and those are easy to give out because that everybody can do it immediately, and they got a trick they can take home, you know, from the trade show.
Right.
But if you, but I would do this other thing first, you know, just the Color Monty, basically, you know, with their card being the last one, but then say, okay, here's one that you could take home, and I'll show that quick one with the flap trick. But that is an easy one that you can. Certainly customized for somebody's birthday party. I mean, even for kids, you know, like in a jumbo thing, you know, that you could have that with a clown or whatever. I mean, you know, as an ending type of a trick. You say just with regular cards you pull out of a deck, you know.
Right, right, right. I find myself thinking about the proposition that any packet trick can be made a cartoon packet trick. You know what I mean? With you know, rabbits or
Marvel heroes right now.
Exactly. And so
is that something that you're thinking about or working on? When you're
I'm not working on it, but I'm thinking about it. Uh-huh. You know, I know that Shigeo Futagawa from Japan. Yeah. I mean, you probably know him. He used to get defectors.
Yep.
He had some cool tricks where. You know, he'd show three blank cards, and then a paw print would appear.
Yes.
And then he'd turn it over, and there'd be a little trail of paw prints, and he turns the other one, and it eventually ends up at a cat.
That was cute, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I always liked that trick.
Do you think there is some magic to the number of cards within a pack of trick? I mean, in other words, like the whole trick, for an example, has, what, six or seven cards, whereas that there's an efficiency with the three cards in Color Monty. You know, some other pack of tricks will have three or four cards. Wild card is one that has what, 8 or 9, 10 cards?
Depends on, yeah,
yeah, depends which, on whatever. Yeah, but do you think that there is an efficient number?
No. I mean, you got to have the right number, and mm-hmm. I think you can run up against packet tricks, and I've done this, where the way they're structured is not efficient,
mm-hmm.
and so you can. You know, I can work on that and try to figure out a way to get rid of that extra card shorten the number of cards, have fewer cards, mm-hmm. and get the same result.
I remember Pat Page doing something with cards across, and was talking about having that efficient, in which they had, seemed like 12 cards, and that there would be, in his version, it'd be a thought of card. You know, somebody would think of one of six cards, and then, you know.
Oh, sure.
You know,
that's the E.G. Brown trick, I bet.
Yeah. But by eliminating, instead of doing a whole deck of cards or however many, you know, I think that you're right, that the audience is going to get bored of counting tricks, you know.
Yeah.
Let me go through the deck here, you know.
Yeah, let me, it's an interesting point. Let me clarify that when I say I don't think a packet trick needs to be taken out of the deck. Mm-hmm. Okay. There are some packet tricks where the backs change color and all that kind of stuff. Those are for the plastic wallets. But there's tricks that use regular cards, like twisting the aces, which is one of the all-time great tricks.
Correct.
And they come right out of a deck.
Paul Harris's Reset.
Reset is one.
Yeah, so it's right out of the deck, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Daly's Aces. You know,
yep,
something tricks that use just a small number of cards from a regular deck. I don't really include those in the definition of packet tricks. I include those as card tricks, but not packet tricks.
I'm with you. I think of those as card tricks, even though it's using a packet as opposed to the full deck.
Right.
I think personally of packet tricks of anything that goes in a plastic wallet, just as you were saying,
mm-hmm.
you know, that might have funny cat paws on it.
Yeah, right. Or, you know, the backs change color.
Sure.
So if you take them out of a deck and the backs change color, now what are you going to do with them? You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yep, it's completely different than that. So your next project, what are you working on then right now?
Right now, you know, I have that Genie column. I do a card trick column for Genie.
How long have you been doing that?
I'm in my third year.
Okay.
And it's every other month, so that's 6 tricks a year.
Are they submitted by others and you kind of introduce the person's
name? No, they're my tricks.
Okay.
I have on occasion brought in a trick that was totally somebody else's,
mm-hmm.
But not very often. And, but I will say coming up with 6 tricks in a year is not easy.
Right.
You know, and I try to work a year ahead.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So like right now I'm working on the fourth year.
Okay. Because
the third year for me is already done.
You got those 6 tricks already ready. Yeah.
Right. And, as soon as I can't stay a year ahead, then I'll just quit because
mm-hmm.
I don't need the pressure.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
I would think that'd be, you know, not only hard, but certainly challenging. And that way it kind of forces you to try to be creative, you know?
Yeah. Which is unfortunate because I don't think you can be forced to be creative. I've been lucky with the column in that, just in my regular card trick interests, that I have been able to come up with the requisite amount of tricks. But yeah, if it was one of those, if it was 12 tricks a year, that would be just too much. And then, because as soon as you get forced to be creative, it's not really that creative anymore, and it becomes sort
of process.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's really not fun. It's just you're spitting something out, and I sometimes think that tricks that are put out by, I don't care who it's going to be, Murphy's Penguin, Illusionist, Vanishing, it's just like, you know, we got to keep feeding the snake. You know, you got to put something else down the throat. There, you know, that there's this voracious appetite, you know, that's out there. It's like good, bad, or indifferent. Just keep them coming.
Yeah, you know? No, I agree with you. I call it the churn. Because the half-life of any new trick is very short. I mean, if Murphy's puts out a trick and hypes it, they'll only do that for about a week or two. Mm-hmm. And penguin, probably less than that. And so the idea is to keep rolling stuff through the mill.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, a lot of it shows. Okay. And then so that's one aspect of the market. The other interesting aspect of the market, I think, is the globalization of magic. I mean, when I was growing up, you had, American magicians and British magicians and maybe one or two French guys, right, or Spanish. But now, everybody in the world, every country in the world has people who do card tricks that can be put into the mainstream. And that changes it, too.
Different dynamic.
Different dynamic, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do you think about one-trick DVDs as far as some of the digital downloads? I mean, you know, your videos have a lot in it, and I'm just noticing that more and more of the tricks that I see out there are just downloads, like, you know, for $5 or $10, and you can get this trick. Have you?
I think that is the model to come. I mean, it's already here, but I mean, I think that's going to become more and more popular over the next several years. And I attribute it to, well, I mean, if you look at iTunes, right? Nobody buys albums anymore, record albums anymore. They buy the tricks.
Right.
And so this is the same kind of thing. And then to the extent you are young and unemployed or just getting started, you probably have $10, but you probably don't have 40.
Right. So you'll buy that one trick.
Right.
Yeah. Same thing like with the song. You know, I think, although that also requires the creator to be more creative. And I'm talking about, let's say, people who are singers. And I've had this discussion with some others before, just so we said about albums and CDs and now digital downloads with iTunes, that it used to be that they just kind of had to fill up the record album by putting some music on there. It's like the B-side wasn't always as great as the A-side, for an example. And then those went from album to CD, so you didn't have to flip the thing, obviously. But then when it went to iTunes, it's like, you know, they would cherry pick just the best songs from the CDs, and the rest of them, you know, kind of were the deep tracks that were rarely, if ever, played.
Right.
And similarly, I can see where that, well, like L&L right now has, well, now they've been doing this for a number of years. They have the best of series, you know, the best of Ring on Rope, the best of, you know what I'm talking about. And they mm-hmm. cherry pick some of the things from all the DVDs and the videos that they have had in the past to put onto a great DVD of some of the best like that.
Yeah, so, it's a really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
I did a penguin video, a penguin lecture,
mm-hmm.
and I sort of made it a condition that they don't do that with my video.
Mm-hmm.
It
will always be intact and not be picked apart.
Right.
Okay.
Unless they renegotiate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, you're an attorney. You think about those kinds of things.
Yeah, but, you know, the game is not that big.
Yeah.
So.
And so the project, I'm sorry, you said you were working on this what? That you were, the new project that you're working
on? Well, it's
on?
The Genie. It's the Genie thing, Com.
Yeah.
And the thing is the digital Genie has a video attached to it.
So you perform?
Of a performance.
Okay.
And
do you shoot that at home?
No, Owen does it. You know.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so it looks great.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're doing the performance, we also do an explanation. Mm-hmm. So that at the end of the year, you're ready to go.
Well, do you get over to England fairly regularly, once a year or something to do?
Once every couple of years.
Okay.
Yeah. And
so you put these things together. That's why you're ahead for a while
right.
in the Genie column then.
Yeah.
Okay. I just didn't know when I was talking about a project they're working on. I understand a column is an ongoing kind of a thing, but I was wondering if perhaps that might have an end game of actually putting those things into a book. I'm saying this for example, Michael Breger, who does a card corner in the IBM in the Linking Ring, that has had a couple of PDFs of some of the things from his columns. It's got some really good ideas in it.
Yeah, I fully intend to put them all into a book
okay.
as well. And so I generally like to have things in print before I put them on video.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Genie, it's sort of happening all at the same time.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's fun.
Well, yeah. Well, speaking of print, and we'll start to kind of conclude with this, but it kind of opens up a whole can of worms, too. And that is that we're seeing a lot less books being printed, and everything really is going more digital, Kindle or, you know, iBooks or whatever, that you're able to have an e-reader to read these e-books. And for an example, with H&R Books, Magic Books going out of business. For a variety of reasons, not necessarily because of what we're talking about, of fewer books being printed, but because that Marshall Peterson just has a life with his family and he just can't keep the business going any longer with kids and work and everything else. But it's not a business that is viable enough to sell to someone else, just as a lot of brick-and-mortar magic shops are not making it. And they can't really sell to another owner. As they get older and they close up or can't make their ends meet, you know, there are fewer and fewer because, again, they're competing with the online. Similarly, I would think that there are fewer books. You know, the last few books I can think of would be John Thompson's book, for an example, you know, and that would be something that people want to have.
Right.
But there are fewer books like that that are must-haves.
Well, yeah. I mean, that market has gotten very small.
Mm-hmm. It used to be that everybody could, you know, in the days when we had the desktop publishing and everybody could do it easily, you know.
Right. Right. And now, nowadays ebooks people could do really easily.
Sure.
So there's no real filter there.
Right.
But if you're going into a hardback book, then other people get involved and other people, you know, need to be happy with what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, but people don't read as much as they used to.
That's very true. I think that we've gotten into a very easy society of reality shows and sound bites and short clips, short attention span, and reading comics almost, you know. So we have something that I can have just the cliff notes of this, you know, rather than digging into War and Peace, you know, kind of a thing.
Right, and they'd rather get their instruction through video than... Mm-hmm. Than through books. I still like books better, but
I like the smell and the feel of it. I mean, that I still go and pull things off my shelf, and I've got bookmarked because I remember certain passages, or if I'm trying to talk to somebody about it, I know where to go to pick it up. And so, yeah, I think that it's invaluable. I mean, my library is not as deep as a lot of other magicians. I've got just about 900 and some. I got a little less than 1,000, but most people have well over that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how many I had because I have some in storage and some boxes I haven't unpacked since we moved and all that kind of stuff.
But any book that you would recommend that somebody should, a good card book that someone starting out should read? I mean, Road to Card Magic is always a good one. But.
Yeah, I actually, if they were serious and they were just starting out, I would recommend the Roberto Giobbe Card College Lite,
okay,
which is all slight light tricks, and because we're, you know, Roberto took the time to, like, one of the volumes, and I don't know which one, has a chapter on openers, a chapter on middle tricks, and a chapter on closers. So you learn to put together, you know, three tricks that go together.
Sure.
Yeah. And but it's hard. It's hard going, and so you need to be serious about it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're casual about it, it's not going to work for you.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, with anything, you have to have some commitment. I don't care what.
Right.
What it is you're trying to, whether it's quilt making or whatever, you know, might be. You have to be serious about it. Well, thanks, John, and I appreciate you being here. And so the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. I always like to close with, what is your philosophy of life? You know, what is your magic phrase, you know, your magic word? What do you live by? When you wake up in the morning, what drives you?
You mean magic-wise?
Yeah, just in life, not necessarily. You know, what is important, you know?
Well, you know... First of all, you know, I work.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And but my hobby is magic, and my goal is to move the ball. You know, there are people out there who said we don't need any new card tricks because we should just do the ones that we already know. Well, that's just wrong. Because where does innovation come from then, right? So when I play around with tricks, I try to make them better but also not better, not just better in the card trick itself, but in its the card trick's place in the whole magic universe or wasteland or whatever you want to call it. So, moving the ball is important.
Yeah, just kind of keep it moving forward, you know, rather than letting it stagnate and having it. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Good. Yeah. Well, thank you, John. I appreciate it again. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, well, thanks for asking me. And
I hope everybody got a lot out of this then as well and getting to know you a little bit better then too. So it's been great. So until next time, it was John Bannon. This is Scotty out. Thank you, John. I appreciate you being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. I enjoyed our conversation, and we were finally able to get together, and it was quite enlightening to learn about the information that you're telling us about packet tricks and about the Saturday sessions and a little bit about Ed Marlowe. And just anyhow, a lot of really great stuff. Thanks again, and I hope that you, the listener, enjoyed this then as well. And speaking of you, the listener, I thank you very much again for tuning in each week, and this past week when you tuned in, you learned about our contest, which directed you to the website at the Magic Word Podcast, and there you were able then to enter the contest, and there was a lot of interest in these two books, equal interest, actually, whether you were wanting to get the one for young readers or one for the adult readers, and they're both going to be great, and so now we are going to announce the winners of each of those books, and I'll tell you who had won and which books that you are going to be receiving. So first we will announce the winners for The Memory Trap by Greg Koren. And there are five winners because there were five ebooks that were offered. And the winners' names are Dengue Guillaume, John Barr, Fan Gao, Joseph Hanasek, and Rick DeNatale. Please forgive me if I mispronounced your names, but that's the best I could do there. And the names of the three winners for the three books published by John Gaspard, that is for The Zombie Ball, and those winners' names are Abe Kamau, Kent Dickison, and Raj Madok. Congratulations to each and every one of the winners this week, and also you are all winners out there whenever you listen to this podcast, and I do appreciate you coming back week after week and listening to the podcast, and also for entering the contest. We do have some more coming up. I've got some things sitting here on my desk right now that have been given to me that are just awaiting the podcast to be produced and actually put out there, and then I can let you know about that contest or those contests as we go along. So got some cool stuff coming up then too. If you are not a member of our podcast subscribers list, then now's a good time that you should be going to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there you can sign up for our pod letter, or our newsletter, some might call, but it's a pod letter, and it comes out each week, and it will let you know not only what is going to be coming on that particular week's episode, who's going to be the guest, but also who's going to be coming up next week, and if there happens to be a contest running or something, this lets you know and reminds you, hey, you need to go and do this, because these contests are only going to be about a week long. So hopefully you'll get in on all of them. So following this podcast, for the next few days, I'm going to be attending the Texas Association of Magicians Convention in San Antonio, Texas, and there I will be posting daily updates, which means there will be several days of these updates coming, and I know that that may be a lot to kind of swallow or to listen to, and so therefore we're not going to be having a podcast next Thursday, so that'll be the normal time when one is going to be released, but because of the number of podcasts that are going to be coming up with the daily updates, I'll give you some time to kind of digest these upcoming daily updates from San Antonio. So there will not be an episode of the Magic Word Podcast next Thursday on September 5th. So be sure and come back then the following week, in which we will again resume normal broadcast episodes. And also, again, if you are a member of the pod letter, then you will understand what all is going to be going on. So sign up today. So until next week, or I should say until the next few days from now, which we will start presenting these daily updates. Stay well, get booked, and remember to move the ball every day. This is Scotty out.